You have excluded Lord Shiva. By the way, this is Lord Brahma speaking. You have excluded Lord Shiva from taking part in the sacrificial results, and therefore you are all offenders at his lotus feet. Still, if you go without mental reservation and surrender unto him and fall down at his lotus feet, he will be very pleased.
I see the Prabhupada's purport. Lord Shiva is also called Ashutosh. Ashu means very soon, and Tosha means to become satisfied. The demigods were advised to go to Lord Shiva and beg his pardon. And because he is very easily pleased, it was certain that their purpose would be served. Lord Brahma knew the mind of Lord Shiva very well, and he was confident that the demigods, who were offenders at his lotus feet, could mitigate their offenses by going to him and surrendering without reservation.
You can continue.
The Sanskrit? Or just
yes, just the Sanskrit and the translation for the next two.
Okay, got it. Ashasana jivatam adhvarasya lokak supalak vitena yasmin tan asu devang priyayavihinang chama payadvang hardi vidhang duruktai. Srila Prabhupada's translation. Lord Brahma also advised them that Lord Shiva is so powerful that by his anger all the planets and their chief controllers can be destroyed immediately. Also, he said that Lord Shiva was especially sorry because he had recently lost his dear wife and was also very much afflicted by the unkind words of Daksha. Under the circumstances, Lord Brahma suggested it would behoove them to go at once and beg his pardon. And text 7, Nahang niyajno natchayu yamanye yedeha bhajo maryaschitatvang vidukpurmanang varavira yorva yasatmatantrasya ka upayang vidjit set. Srila Prabhupada's translation and purport. Lord Brahma said that no one, not even himself, Indra, all the members assembled in the sacrificial arena, or all the sages, could know how powerful Lord Shiva is. Under the circumstances, who would dare to commit an offense at his lotus feet? Report. After Lord Brahma advised the demigods to go to Lord Shiva and beg his pardon, it was suggested how he should be satisfied and how the matter should be placed before him. Brahma also asserted that none of the conditioned souls, including himself and all the demigods, could know how to satisfy Lord Shiva. But he said, it is known that he is very easily satisfied, so let us try to satisfy him by falling at his lotus feet. Actually, the position of the subordinate is always to surrender to the Supreme. That is the instruction of Bhagavad Gita. The Lord asks everyone to give up all kinds of concocted occupations and simply surrender unto him. That will protect the conditioned souls from all sinful reactions. Similarly, in this case, Brahma also suggested that they go and surrender unto the lotus feet of Lord Shiva. For since he is very kind and easily satisfied, this action would prove effective.
Thank you, Prabhu. Om Gyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Guru Vinamaha Mukham Kurochi Vachanam Pangun Langayate Girin Yakripa Tamaham Vande Shivim Dinatayam Panchakalpa Taruvyascha Kripa Sindhuvi Evacha Patitanam Pavnebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Today, Gaudachandra Prabhu was scheduled to give class, but he's not feeling well, so at the last minute, Ramananda Prabhu asked me if I would fill in, So I'll do the best I can, and with everyone's blessings, we'll have a successful Bhagavatam class. So I find it interesting that Lord Shiva has been offended, and Lord Brahma is advising the Daksha, actually, and his followers, that in order for them to be forgiven for this great offense against a great, great Vaishnava, that they must go and surrender to Lord Shiva and fall at his lotus feet and beg forgiveness. Now, this must be a really important instruction for us, because we find that Lord Shiva kind of switches roles in another pastime and teaches us the same lesson. I'm speaking specifically of his partial expansion of Dorvas Muni. He accepts the role of the offender and has to take shelter of the great Vaishnava that he had offended, King Ambarish. And so just as Lord Shiva, in the role that we're studying here, he's so exalted, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. I mean, he's speaking of offending a Vaishnava, so he is the greatest of all Vaishnavas, and he's given the title Gopeshwar Mahadev, that he's always absorbed in the highest level of meditation, of meditating upon the Rasa Lila of Krishna in Vrindavan. So similarly, King Ambarish was a very, very exalted devotee. He was the, just as Lord Shiva is a very high birth, he took birth actually directly from Krishna, between his eyes or something. Lord Shiva took his birth. And Ambarish, he's the great grandson of Manu. His father, Nabaga, I believe, was the grandson of Manu. And so Ambarish was so exalted. He was the he was so exalted that he was the king of the entire world. I mean, previously the world was Ilavarta, and then when King Bharat became king, it was called Bharat Varsa. So he was a king of the whole world. Similarly, Ambarish, he was a king of the entire world. But like other great exalted kings that we've read about, Ambarish, I mean, imagine being the king of the world, but he considered all of this opulence that he had as temporary, and he was completely unattached to it. And he saw all the opulences of this world as potential causes of fall down into conditional life. And therefore, he was completely, completely unattached to any of it. We were just mentioning King Bharat. So just like King Bharat, when he was very young, that verse, Yodusha Jandara Sutan Suhid Rajan Pradis Prishaha, Jahau Yuvaiva Malavat Uttamashloka Lalasaha. So King Bharat, also, you know, king of the world, Yodushtajan, which means something very difficult to give up, Dara, which means wife, and Sutan, and his children's. Yodushtajan, Dara, Suhrid Rajan, Pradis Vishahasru, Suhrid is like his other, you know, friends and family members, Rajan. So apparently this is King King Bricket hearing from Sukadeva Goswami, Sutta Rajan, Pradis Prishaha, these things that are Pradis Prishaha, very firmly fixed in the heart. King Bharat was so detached, Jahal, that he gave it all up. Yuvaiva Malavat, in his youth, Yuvaiva Malava, just like stool, walked away from everything, Uttama Shloka Lalasa, because he was so fond of and absorbed and found all of his joy in Uttama Shloka Lalasaha, the wonderful descriptions of the Supreme Lord, Uttama Shloka, which means one who's praised by transcendental song. And so in that way, King Ambarish showed that in every respect that all of his joy came from being absorbed in meditation upon Krishna, very deeply so. Savaimana Krishna Padaravindio, that his mind was always 24 hours a day, whether he was awake or whether he was asleep, he was always meditating upon the nectar of the lotus feet of the Lord. Vachansi Vaikuntha Gunana Varnane, and he was always engaged, Vachansi speaking, Vaikuntha Gunana Varnane is describing the wonderful pastimes of the Lord. And his ears were always engaged in taking every opportunity to hear the wonderful descriptions of the Lord. He had, I think that verse where Lord Chaitanya tells Sanatana Goswami, Gramya Keta Nashunibe, Gramya Vartor Nakahibe, that Gramya Keta, we all know this, the village talk, Nashunibe, don't hear Gramya Vartor Nakahibe, and don't ever speak it. And Narada was speaking to Vyas about describing the glories of Krishna, that only this is all that the real Vaishnavas want to hear. He says, Yadvansas Chitra Pradang Harir Yasho Jagapavitrang Pagranita Karhichit Tadvayasam Kirtam Ushanti Manasam Niyantarhanta Niramantya Sikshriya. So he's saying that those words, Yadvansas Chitra Pradang means to like ornament, that those words, vacha, which are spoken, which do not ornament Hare Yasho, which are not in glorification of Krishna, Jagat Pavitram Pragranita Karhichit, who alone can purify all the worlds, Tadvayasam Tirtham Ushanti Manasa, that words that are not spoken in that regard, Tadvayasam Tirtham, that they're like a Tirtham, a place of pilgrimage, Vyasam for the crows. Therefore, those are Ushanti Manasa, Niyatamsa, Niramanta Shikshriya. So, Ushikshriya, those are like from the transcendental abode, that they derive no pleasure at all in hearing words which are not in glorification of Krishna. So, Ambarish in this way was completely absorbed and always wanting to hear and speak about the Lord. And his eyes, he was kind of like the poster child for engaging all of his senses in Krishna. His eyes were always absorbed in seeing the beautiful form of the deity and the holy temples. And just like the Bhagavatam describes that if our eyes are not fixed upon the lotus feet of the Lord and seeing the Vaishnavas, that they're just as useless as the eyes that we see in the feather of the peacock. And his hands were engaged in touching the body of the Lord's devotees. His sense of smell was always engaged in relishing the fragrance of the tulsi and incense that's offered to the Lord. Probably many of us remember when we first started going to the temple. I mean, this was really those of us that kind of went back to the early 70s, and I guess some of us even back to the 60s. I mean, incense was kind of like a new thing back then. I guess the younger people grow up with incense, but incense didn't know much about incense. But I remember going to the temple, and it was amazing fragrance of incense. And even the books, when I got my first Back to Godhead magazine, God, it was like permeated with this wonderful smell. And for years, because I kept that, even though I didn't I had a hard time understanding it. But I kept it for years, and it somehow it kept that amazing fragrance. I suppose I was getting purified. It must have been like when the spiritual sky incense was being produced. I guess it was there. Maybe they pack it all together, but I'm sure many of us remember just that amazing smell. So coming to the temple, it was like a new experience. Well, I wasn't used to amazing fragrances like that. And he engaged his tongue always in tasting prashad. Boy, you know how wonderful that is when we first tasted prashad. I remember going to the Sunday feast and just relishing the wonderful prashad that was there. And engaged his legs and walking to the temples and holy places of pilgrimage. And what else? His head, he would always bow his head down before the Lord. And so he taught that by engaging all of our senses. And if we think about it, we go to the temple, we do all these things. Prabhupada gave us the perfect formula. We're always bowing down before the deities and smelling the wonderful scents and hearing about Krishna and speaking about Krishna and seeing the beautiful form of the deities. Prabhupada gave us this perfect formula in our ISKCON society to where all of our senses would be engaged in the service of Krishna, as was the case with Ambarish. There's the verse in Nectar Devotion describing Sarvopati Vinirmutan Tatparatvena Nirmalam Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchate, that when we engage all of our senses in the service as Ambarish Maharaj taught us and as Prabhupada is engaging us, then the two effects are that we become freed from all upadis, all types of material designations, thinking I'm man, I'm woman, I'm white, I'm black, I'm this body. We become free from those upadis and our senses become purified. Sometimes the senses are very dangerous. The senses just can destroy us, drag us to hell. But when those senses are engaged in the service of Krishna, the example is given, it's just like a snake, the fangs are broken. So they become, we engage our senses, but they're no longer dangerous because they're engaged in the service of Krishna, and we become completely purified in that regard. So then we know that one day for further purification, Ambarish, though was already so incredibly pure, he, and I believe his wife also, I read this somewhere or heard, that his wife also, they decided to perform this great vrata in observance of Ekadasi. So we know how powerful Ekadasi is. There's that song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Shuddha Bhakata, where he says, Madhavatiti Bhakti Janani Jatani Palanakori. So Madhavatiti, these very holy days like Ekadasi and Janmasthami, Bhakti Janani, so Janani is his mother, that they're the mothers of bhakti, the mothers of devotion, Jatana Palana Kori, those who observe them and with their true heart and soul. And so they decided to observe Ekadasi, but there's a special, I don't know much about it, but somehow it was I guess it's there in Shastra, that if someone is really, really wants to do a big-time vrata, he can observe Ekadasi for an entire year. And this is what Ambarish and his wife had decided to do, that they were going to observe a one-year Ekadasi. So if you think about it, if you're going to start observing Ekadasi, you're not going to eat for not just a year, but you're not going to eat for a year and a day. Because Ekadasi starts on Ekadasi, and this was a complete fast. So I guess nirjal wasn't the question. I suppose somehow or other you're able to live without a year for the year without eating. I guess that was in another yuga or something. But somehow go for a year without eating, but I guess drinking wouldn't be an option. So you would start observing, or as they did, on Ekadasi, fasting, and then the day after Ekadasi, Dvadasi, was the day that was to be broken. So shortly before Ambarish and his wife are ready to break this fast, we all know the story, Durvasa Muni, she arrived, and Ambarish, he was a great Vaishnava, so Ambarish welcomed him and asked to be pleased join him at the breakfast, and graciously Durvasa Muni accepted the invitation, but asked first if he could go and take bath in the Jamuna. So my understanding is what happened is when Durvasa Muni went to bathe in the Jamuna, he went into a deep meditation, a deep samadhi, which, and you know, the clock was ticking, and the titi was soon arriving when Ambarish was to, and his wife was to break this ratha, to break the fast. And so it was a real serious a conundrum for Ambarish, you know, what to do, because according to Shastra, that you if someone is in meditation, as was Durvasa Muni, you're not supposed to disturb them, and which is the reason that Sringi, you know, that that inexperienced Brahmin, the son of King Parikit, he became so angry with the son of the sage Samak Muni, Samak Rishi, Sringi. So when King Parikit put the snake around and sort of offended his father, which he should never disturb someone who was in meditation upon the Lord, you know, Sringi became really angry and cursed him, but it was a small mistake. But anyway, it was the, you know, if he were to not break that vrata at a proper time, not only would he not get the benefits, but there would be catastrophic results to his entire kingdom. And this was his concern. He wasn't thinking just myself. How is this going to affect me? This will have bad repercussions for me. No, he's thinking like the father of the entire world, and this could bring great effect upon the world. And as a true king and a great Kshatriya leader, it was of concern to him. So he consulted with his Brahmana advisors, and so they studied all. They looked through the scriptures and different Dharma Shastra texts, and they concluded that, well, if you drink a little water, it would complete the vrata, but at the same time, it's not considered eating food. So hopefully that would, you know, be okay with Ambarish. So, with Durvasa Muni. So Ambarish, he took three little tiny spoonfuls of water. And when Durvasa Muni came out of his meditation and he returned to eat, he was such a powerful sage that he could understand what happened. He was Tri Kalagya. I mean, he knew what had happened, and that the king had taken some water, but he considered that a great sacrilegious offense. So he was incredibly angry, and his eyes were red like copper. And so Ambarish, with folded hands, he very nicely explained to Durvasa Muni exactly what the situation was, and he offered his heartfelt apologies, and he begged for forgiveness. But Durvasa Muni was just enraged, and he couldn't hear what was being said in earnest. So he became so disturbed that he plucked a strand of hair from his head and recited certain mantras, and he threw it down at the ground, and immediately this very fiery demon was produced, and with the intention of killing and inflicting great pain and harm upon Ambarish. If you can imagine now, this demon was produced, fiery demon, and witnessing all of this was you know, the queen and the brahmanas and so many guests. They were shocked and they were aghast to see, you know, what was happening, and everyone was totally struck with fear. But King Ambarish, he wasn't fearful. He wasn't perturbed in the least. He just stood with folded hands, and he was just meditating upon the Lord, literally with no fear at all. In this nice, so many nice verses in that regard, like actually, Lord Shiva said when his wife Parvati had cursed King Chitraketu to take birth as a demon, Lord Shiva said a famous verse, Narayana Paraksarve Anakucha Senavidyate Svarga Apavarga Narkeshu Pitolya Darshanam, that the one who was Narayana Parayana, one who was completely surrendered to Krishna, Nakucha Senavidyate, that he is in all circumstances or in any circumstances, he is avidyate. There's no fear at all in any circumstance. And for a Vaishnava, Svarga Apavarga Narkeshu, whether we're talking, whether he's in heaven or some liberated state or even in hell, Api Tulyartha Darshanam, he is, Tulya is equal, Darshanam. He sees it all equally. He doesn't care. He's not afraid of death because he knows that death has really nothing to do with the soul, and he knows that Krishna will always protect him. There's this Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He's a Maravirako Bijo Ichchatohar Nichajastratitu Adhikar. He says, Maravirakobi, you can kill me, you can protect me, yo Ichchatohar. This is, whatever you desire. Nichajasprati, but I am your eternal servant, Tua Adhikar. So this is your prerogative, Adhikar. This is, you do whatever you want. I don't care. And even Prahlad, he was only 5 years old. Generally, little children, they get scared so quickly. Mother Tulsi was spending some time here, several weeks actually, and I was never around the child very much. But God, children, they're spooked so easily. And Prahlad, at 5 years old, when all these atrocities were being inflicted upon him by his father, demoniac Hiranyakashipu, was completely fearless. So this was the position of the great king. Immediately, as soon as the demon began to approach the king, the Lord dispatched his Sudarshan disc, and within an instant, it killed that demon. It just was a rent asunder. And then immediately after killing the demon, the disc, the Sudarshan disc, it altered its course, and it went in hot pursuit after Durvas Muni. So Durvas, he began running in, you know, every possible direction, and there was nothing he could do to get away from the disc. You may wonder, why didn't the disc, you know, this catch up and just kill him? Is he actually faster than the disc? But my understanding is that, and I remember reading or I heard in a class that the Sudarshan disc is very dharmic, and because it will not kill someone that's running, it's running from him. So anyway, he was running, and he was full of fear, and he was running. So the disc was just like waiting for the right moment to get him. And so he went, you know, all for the universe. He went to Indraloka, and he tried to take shelter of Indra, but Indra told him, no, you've offended this Vaishnava Aparad. I can't help you. He went to Brahmaloka, and Brahma, same thing. He said, you've offended a Vaishnava. There's nothing I can do. And he even, I think he even went to Maheshtam and tried to take shelter of Lord Shiva, which was himself. But anyway, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I believe he went to Maheshtam. And finally, no one could mitigate. So he finally went into Vaikuntha and approached Narayan, and he fell at the lotus feet of Narayan and begged to please spare him from the Sudarshan disc. But Narayan explained that even I myself, I'm not able to protect you from a Vaishnava Aparad. But he did instruct, just as we're hearing now, the same advice that was given by Lord Brahma to Daksha and the followers. The Lord gave the same exact advice to Durvas Muni that you'll have to go and approach Ambarish and beg forgiveness. So taking that advice, Durvas Muni went to Ambarish, who was just standing there still with folded hands, and he fell at the lotus feet of Ambarish, and he begged to please forgive him. And Ambarish was so humble that he really didn't take any offense. It was the Lord really that took the offense. Ambarish is, Vaishnava doesn't take it. It's said that a Vaishnava forgives an offense before it's even been completed. He's already forgiven it. So Ambarish felt terrible that this great sage, Durvas Muni, had to undergo such fear and such difficulty. So Ambarish, he prayed to the Lord to please retract the Sudarshan disc. And the Sudarshan, of course, hearing this wonderful prayer that was being offered to the Lord, Sudarshan, which is, of course, a great personality, Sudarshan felt very satisfied and returned to Vaikuntha. And with genuine sincerity now, Durvas thanked Ambarish, and they took prasad together, and all was forgiven. So the last report, Prabhupada's talking about, let me just read a little this here. Brahma also asserted that none of the conditioned souls, including himself and all the demigods, could know how to satisfy Lord Shiva. But he said, it is known that he is very satisfied, and so let us try to satisfy him by falling his feet. Actually, Prabhupada says in the purport, actually the position of a subordinate is always to surrender to the Supreme. That is the instruction of Bhagavad Gita. The Lord asks everyone to give up all kinds of concocted occupations and simply surrender unto him. And that will protect the conditioned souls from all sinful reactions. So I guess my take on this is that, we read about Durvas Muni and we read about Daksha and the terrible mistakes they've made. But I think we have to be, that the lesson is there for us, certainly for myself, that we have a lot of Daksha and Durvas Muni in me. Those qualities are there. That we've offended, of course, the greatest of all, we've offended Krishna. We've been in this material world, or we turned away from Krishna and came into this world, and we've been offending living entities since time immemorial in this world. And therefore, just as we hear about Durvas Muni was running from the Sudarshan disc, in the same way, we're also running from the wheel of samsara is chasing us, every one of us. The wheel of samsara and the chakra of time, it's very fearful. And this is what happens when we've turned away from Krishna. There's that nice verse by by the Nanyugindras to King Nimi, where he says, Bhayangdhatiya Vinivashitasyad Ishadapitasyatavto Yadar Smati Tanmayayato Buddha Abhijetang Bhatyaki Isham Guru Devatatma. So he's describing that when we turn away from Krishna, everything becomes fearful because of our absorption in the illusory energy. And it's very, very fearful. And therefore, if one is intelligent, then he should, unflinching devotion, he should surrender to the spiritual master, who he accepts as the worshipful deity, his very life and soul. That will protect him, is by surrendering to Guru. So, who knows how many people or who we've surrendered, we've offended. We certainly know we've offended Krishna. So our position, as Prabhupada is telling us in the last report, is as Krishna is saying, just surrender unto me. To surrender unto me, of course, for us means to surrender unto the spiritual master. And by taking shelter of Guru, then we become freed from all these sinful reactions. Krishna says, aham tvam sarva papyebhyo, I'll protect you from all reactions. Mokshishami, mashuchaha, don't worry, I'll free you from that. And there's that famous verse by, who spoke it? Maitreya, I believe, to Vidura. Ashesha sankleshya samang vidade gunan vadat shavanan morare kivapunach charanaravinda paragaseva ritar atmalabda. That simply by chanting the name of the Lord and absorbing ourselves in this way, that we become freed from asesha sankleshya. That means unlimited reactions and miseries we become freed from as soon as we take shelter of Krishna through the Guru. What to speak of those? What to speak of those who, by this process of becoming freed from our sinful reactions, it goes a step further that those who developed a taste for the flavor of serving the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord. So it's kind of like two great things are happening when we engage in spiritual life, is that we become freed from all of our sinful reactions, but much, much, much greater than that, is we develop that attachment to Krishna and our hearts become purified. In this way, our lives become successful. Okay, so I'm going to stop here and turn it over to all of you and see if anyone has something to add. Thank you all. Hare Krishna.
I've unmuted everybody. So if anyone has any questions or comments.
Leaders of different spiritual denominations or religions have to see who is this person, who is this Swami, the leader of this
house. I did unmute everybody, didn't I?
Oh, maybe they're quiet today. It's okay. If no one has anything to add, I actually have to. Got a lot of DV service to do, which I normally do during class, and then I have to leave early to go to meet with my attorney. So it's fine with me if we quit early, but if anybody's got something that they want to add, we can take a few minutes.
I just want to say thank you, Narahari Prabhu. You give amazing classes on the spur of the moment.
I prayed to Gornitai just before I sat down to speak, and I really take it very seriously. When actually Ramananda called me late last night, just when I was ready to go to sleep, and he asked me to give class. Ramananda was also ready to go to sleep. We had both just finished late weddings, and I took it very serious that if Ramananda is such an exalted Vaishnava, he's doing such wonderful service, that, you know, how can I say no? I knew that if I felt sure that Krishna and Ramananda Prabhu would empower me to somehow speak and say something. So, and all of you in such wonderful association.
Thank you.
I have just one.
Hey, Doug,
I have one short. Very well.
Help us out.
Well, I ran into a born-again Christian the other day, and it was not a pleasant experience. And at one point, it just came out of me. I didn't think about it before I said it, but I said, get off your high horse, you know? and it stopped him in his tracks. He stopped what he was doing to me. And then I thought of the seven deadly sins and pride. We're dealing with that in these chapters with Daksha. So the seven deadly sins are pride, greed, lust, envy, gluttony, wrath, and sloth, laziness. So, and it's interesting that the three gates to hell in Bhagavad Gita, I was telling him, I was working on this illustrated Gita, I thought he might be interested in it. I had known him a little bit previous, but he hadn't come out quite as strongly as he did that day, the other day. So the three gates to hell are lust, anger, and greed, which are within the seven. But I was looking at Wikipedia page and just seeing where all this came from, and it's some 4th century monk, and then it worked its way into the Christian teachings. But the one line that caught my attention was the capital sins, from lust to envy, are generally associated with pride, which has been labeled as the father of all sins. And that struck me, that line. That the and it's also in the list of the seven, it's the first. And in the demoniac qualities in 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, arrogance, pride, conceit, it's almost the first three are connected with pride.
It starts with pride. Dumbo, Dharpa, Vimanascha, Dumbas.
Right.
Pride. It starts right out with pride.
Right. So, and that's what got Durvasa in trouble also with Ambarish. So, anyway, it just relates to the section where in Bhagavatam, and I just thought it was worth mentioning.
Thank you. Yeah, pride's a big one, and I it's one that I certainly struggle with. And
could I ask a question then?
Sure.
Sometimes I get confused between pride and false prestige. Is there a difference between those
two? Well, they're certainly related. I you know, really have to think about it. You could probably answer the question as well as I could. But a lot of these, they're all related. They're all interwoven with one another. It's hard to just totally separate one from the others. There's like a fabric that runs through all of them.
One definition of pride is self-overestimation. Hmm. Another one is hubris. Hmm.
And if we, as we advance in spiritual life, we kind of realize we have nothing to be proud of, because anything that's everything we're able to do or say or think, they're borrowed plumes. We're thinking it's all coming from us.
Yeah, what Giri Govardhan said the other day. He said that we can feel fortunate that we've come into contact with the charges in the line and Krishna consciousness, but we shouldn't think we're better than others.
Right. Yeah, that was a great point. I remember that. Yeah, that was a brilliant point. Yeah, we are fortunate. We're really, really fortunate.
It mentions false prestige. Is that to have you think that there's real prestige? Like we have false ego, but there's a real ego. False prestige is the real prestige.
Well, I would say yes. In the liberated state, we're full of unlimited good qualities. Sarvai gunais tattva samasapesara. We have all the Vaishnavas, all these great, great, great qualities. Unlimited. They're the qualities of Krishna. And we're part and parcel of Krishna. Yeah. So Prabhupada gives the example, if you examine a one drop of ocean water, it's got all the same properties as the entire ocean, albeit tiny. And the soul has all the unlimited qualities of Krishna. Most. There is the real side, but it doesn't make us proud. But certainly the quality is there.
It says cleaning the dust off of the mirror. So the dust is the pride and the false prestige. So when the mirror is clean, does that mean that the qualities that you're seeing are from Krishna instead of the dust that's blocking the real qualities?
I don't know if a devotee, if a pure devotee actually sees his own good qualities. They're there and others see them, but I don't think he sees them. Uttama Adhikari feels himself more fallen than others. It's clear and others see it. But, it's something I have no personal experience of because I'm still, my mirror is quite dirty. But that's my understanding. A Vaishnava doesn't think much of himself. He doesn't think of himself at all. What's that saying that being humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. So I don't think the Vaishnava focuses on his good qualities. That's not a quality of a Vaishnava. He doesn't see it. He's unable to see his own great qualities. Others do, but he doesn't.
Well, I could say that I feel very, very proud to be in the association of all of you.
And that's okay. And that's good. That's proper. You should be. I'm proud to be a part of the Sangha. There were such serious sadhakas. They're here every day, and all we want to do together, with all of our differences and so on. We've all got our differences, and that's okay. But we're all together, helping one another to study and hear the glories of Krishna. And I think Krishna is so pleased that Krishna is fully, fully present. And Krishna says that, when his devotees are speaking his glories, that's where he is present. So if it's okay with everybody else, it's 7 o'clock. I've got to leave here in an hour. I've got a lot of DV service. I've got to take a shower, et cetera, et cetera, and head to town. So anyway, thank you all very much for being here today. And we'll see everybody back here tomorrow.
Thank you very much, Prabhu. Excellent class. Thank you so much.
You're all very welcome. Thank you for your association. Glorious Prabhupada. Hari Bol.
Hari Bol.
Hari Bol.